are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I don't give fantasy advice for free. Come on.
I can understand that part of it, but, no one even wants my advice for free right now.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Eli, you were there, and you were standing right next, or right behind Craig, while he was drafting his team. You couldn't have said something to him, knocked him on the shoulder.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Look, everyone's on their own on those leagues, all right?
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Hey, Justin was right there, too. I don't know why he's not taking any responsibility for this.
What?
Well, I'm throwing you guys both under the bus at the end of the year.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 261 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Darius Hollaston and Eli Rosenzweig. Eli, how you doing?
Doing good, buddy. What about you?
I'm doing fantastically, getting ready for hopefully what is going to be a nice, relaxing weekend. Darius, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Is that something that you've sort of got planned out, or is that just, a vague hope you have that's going to be completely ruined straight away?
Yeah, it's a vague hope. I mean, I'm married with a kid. The kid's got two baseball games this weekend, which should monopolize, a fair majority of the weekend. So I'm sure I won't get anything done that I want to get done. But, baseball's baseball, right?
Yeah, it all counts. Do you do any fantasy analysis for your daughter's league, or...?
No, but I definitely keep score even though we're not supposed to. Joining us today is a special guest, and that is Craig Mish of SiriusXM. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's going on? How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm in that same boat as you, looking for a relaxing weekend, but there's no chance of that ever happening. I have two kids also, but I do get a reprieve tomorrow because it's Record Store Day. So I'm very much looking forward to that, spending a few hours digging through some old stuff, and then spend the day watching some baseball, because there's no games in South Florida, unfortunately, this weekend.
Well, I mean, baseball's still nice, and that's the one thing, you miss from your youth is, not having to be pulled in every direction because of kids, but they are a joy.
Yeah, it's definitely really cool. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it's kind of weird to not think about anything but baseball when baseball season comes. And that's kind of what I try to do for about 5 months. And so here we are.
All right. Well, let's, before we actually jump into some baseball talk, Craig, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, what you do over at Sirius and any other place you do work for, and then, tell people where they can reach you on social media.
Sure. I've been a broadcaster on television and radio for over 20 years. And right now I am and have been based out of the South Florida market, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, for about the last 15 years of that 20 years. And currently hosting on a couple of different of the channels on SiriusXM platform, mainly SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio. I also will do work on SiriusXM NFL Radio. And I have in the past worked on MLB Network Radio. In addition to that, I work in the South Florida market in Miami, sometimes on the Miami Marlins Radio Network, which is 940 Wins, Miami Sports. But those are kind of infrequent. My everyday gig is on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, and I host every Monday through Friday from 9 to 11 Eastern with Jim Bowden and Cliff Floyd, and on Sunday from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern with Lenny Melnick. And on Twitter, my handle is at Craig Mish.
Awesome. Well, let's jump in and talk about some fantasy baseball. Let's start with Ender Inciarte, who I think felt a little bit kind of under-talked about within the industry coming into this season. Craig, what are your thoughts on what Ender Inciarte has done so far this year and what we can expect from him for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I spoke to him last year before spring training, and I got the feeling that he wasn't even 100% comfortable in Atlanta. He had moved on from Arizona, and I thought the Braves were going to move him somewhere else. But as they saw him play, they kind of determined that he'd be more of a building block for them and a really good defensive player too, which doesn't really help us in fantasy. But I think he's there to stay. I don't think the power is here to stay. I think that's a little bit of a surprise. you know, I mean, look, every once in a while somebody can go the way of Altuve, going from 7, 8, 10 home runs to 24. I don't know that he has 20 home runs in his bat, but I do think that he can probably hit 12 to 15. The one issue for me always with Inciarte is he hasn't had the best instincts in terms of base running. So to count on 15 home runs and 15 steals, I think it's a possibility, but I think you'll probably get more along the lines of 12, 18, something like that. And hopefully the Braves will be competitive, which definitely would lead to him getting some more opportunities. So I'm liking the start. I don't roster him. I don't have him anywhere. But I think April could end up being his best month when it's all said and done.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Inciarte?
Yeah, I'm definitely not sure the power's here to stay, although this already represents a higher total than last year, which is kind of crazy. But to be honest, I'm not sure that I want it to stay either, because I think, especially if he's going to hit on the top of the lineup, I want to see him with that high batting average and a decent OBP rather than the home runs, but the low average in OBP he's got now. I think that would probably be more useful for his fantasy production overall, rather than the power guy who isn't getting on base. And if he keeps this kind of slash lineup, then he might not hit at the top of the lineup anymore either. So, that's not really something that I want to see. So I think he can continue to be a good average guy with some speed, but I don't think that this power combo is actually working for him as an overall player at the moment. So I'm kind of hoping he goes back to being the average guy rather than trending in the 15-20 home run direction.
Eli, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not really buying the power either. He's got 17 career homers in 400 games, so these four right now seem like a huge aberration to me. Craig also mentioned that he's not the best base stealer. He gets caught way too many times. I mean, yeah, maybe he'll give you 15, but I mean, as a leadoff man with pretty much no power, you need to get a lot of steals or have an elite average or be on a good team to score a ton of runs to kind of offset the lack of power in RBIs, but I just don't see any of that with Inciarte. I mean, he might be okay in some of these categories, but he's maybe a little underappreciated. But kind of like Craig said, he's more of like a good real-life player because he's a good defender. But in terms of fantasy, he doesn't really offer me a whole lot.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much to be excited about necessarily. I agree with you all, you guys, in terms of power not being legit. I would be surprised if he still got to double-digit home runs this year and he's already got a four spot to start off the season. For me, I wish he'd walk a little bit more. He showed a little bit more patient approach last year, walking almost 8% of the time, but he's right back down to what was, you know, kind of previous career norm for him, which is about 4.5%. If he doesn't walk and this average doesn't rebound very well, he's not going to be on base enough to really steal a ton of bags or score a ton of runs. And I could see him get moved out of that leadoff spot. I mean, he needs to be doing a better job setting the table. He's not really working into his skill set right now. So I'm not really an Inciarte guy, and I don't think I really have been in the past. So I would probably be looking to sell if anybody's willing to buy. Let's talk about Joe Ross, who made his first start in the major leagues this season, pitching 7 strong innings, putting together a pretty nice line. Craig, what are your thoughts on Joe Ross for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I want to talk about real quick before I get to Ross.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no, an interesting thing that I think is just important for everybody who's listening, and it's not necessarily wrong what you're saying, Justin, but I do want to make the point because occasionally, and with covering sports in the media, I have a chance to talk to a lot of these players. And I want to bring up something that you said about the disappointment in walk, because when you just look at numbers, I think that's a fair assessment to take a look at him and Billy Hamilton and D. Gordon as leadoff hitters and say to yourself, well, you know, if they can only walk a little bit more, man, how much value would they have both in reality and fantasy to the team? And so I posed that same question to D. Gordon a couple of years ago and said, you know, I mean, a lot of people call us, they ask, you know, why don't you walk more? Why don't you walk more? And the answer is pretty simple for guys like Inciarte. Now, it's changed a little bit this year with the power that he's shown. But just to give you an idea and the glimpse behind this conversation is that pitchers will not walk players who do not hit home runs. They're only going to see fastballs over the plate because worst case scenario is what are they going to do? They're going to hit a ball in the air. They're going to hit a ball on the ground, but it's not going to go out of the park. So it's very hard to look at a guy like Gordon, Hamilton, Inciarte and say, wow, I wish their walk rate would go up, because simply put, pitchers are not going to walk those players if they can't beat them over the fence. And it was something that I really hadn't thought of necessarily. I mean, these guys are not Kyle Schwarber. They really almost have no power whatsoever. So the steady diet of balls right over the plate, which is why I don't think you'll see walks. Now, maybe Inciarte is a little bit different this year because he's showing more power. But in general, that's what players have told me, just to kind of give you the analysis from my point on that.
I think that's a really great point, and it's great that you brought that up, because, I mean, that's something I think we have talked about in the past with a guy like Billy Hamilton not being able to really, you know, show the power. People aren't afraid to kind of go after him, and they don't walk him as often. So I think that's a very, very good point you bring up.
Yeah, they're not leadoff hitters, not named Ricky Henderson and Tim Raines, are going to see fastballs. They're not going to see a lot of off-speed pitches, because as long as they feel like they have a pretty good defensive team behind them, there's no reason to pitch around someone who, worst case, is going to hit one to the gap. And we know that that's not going to happen usually more than one out of every four or five times these guys are up that we're talking about. But anyway, going back to Ross, and I'm sorry to go off on that.
Oh, no worries. That's great information.
Okay, and you know, listen, I saw Ross in spring a little bit. He wasn't 100% ready. He wasn't pitching well. I live in South Florida. The Nationals and Astros play about 45 minutes from me in the spring. So I had a chance to see him a little bit, and I never thought he was really at 100%. But I think the mistake that we made with Ross is kind of the mistake that we make with some other guys who aren't ready at the start of the season, is in the end, the skill is going to always get you to the big leagues. And there was no question that Ross's skill was better than Guthrie, but every once in a while, a team is going to send a message to a different player just by either keeping them in the minors and making them work on some things just to kind of say to them, hey, look, you may have been a good big leaguer last year, but you're still young. You still have more to prove. The Marlins did that with Adam Conley, not naming him into the rotation until the last week of the season. So Ross is somebody that I would have interest in for sure. The Nationals are a very good hitting team. They're going to get back Turner now. They have Daniel Murphy. They have Bryce Harper. Even if he's their fourth or fifth starter, I think his skill set could be even better than Tanner Roark. So I would probably own him in just about every fantasy league at this point and hope that he can pull off 12 to 15 wins for you, provided that bullpen gets cleared up, either with the guys they have there or somebody that they add.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Joe Ross?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's playing for a good team, pitching in the NL. He was really good last year as a 23-year-old, pretty good control, solid K rate. What I love about him the most is that he's just deadly against righties. Righties have a career 204, 245, 306 slash line. Lefties have been killing him. They hit over 300 against him. So maybe against a lefty stack lineup, maybe you skip that one. But for the most part, I'm rolling him out.
Darius, are you rolling out Joe Ross?
Well, to build off Eli's point about lefties, the one thing I really wanted to see from Ross this season was a third pitch, and he didn't really use one in the first start. I think he used two or three change-ups at most. So while it was a good start, I still want to see a little bit more from him before I'm willing to trust him on a regular basis, because I do think he has trouble the third time through the order, and I do think he's going to have trouble against lefties until he figures out another pitch to neutralize them. So I think there's something there, and I certainly think he's got the potential to do it, but I'm not quite as high on him. I think I need to see a little bit more development first.
I think that's a really good point in terms of not having a third pitch that he necessarily trusts, and the changeup hasn't been great at times, so I get that. I love the skills. I mean, he obviously reminds me a lot of his older brother, Tyson Ross, who, you know, unfortunately still working his way back from injury. But I think that's the biggest thing that you have to be worried about with Joe Ross. I think the skills will be fine throughout the year. There'll be you know, bad starts here and there. But for the most part, I think what you're going to get is pretty good contribution as long as he's healthy. And I just worry about the health. So the deeper the league, the harder it is for me to roster a guy like Ross, because there's going to be less out there available on the waiver wire in order to pick up if and when he does go down. So for me, I'm much more likely to roster a guy like Ross in a 12-team format than I am in a deeper format, like a 15 mix or deeper. Let's talk about Starling Marte's suspension real quick, and then talk about his replacement for the time being. Starling Marte was suspended for 80 games for performance-enhancing drugs. So fantasy owners are kind of left a little bit shit out of luck right now. And it's unfortunate for, you know, guys like me who have multiple shares of Starling Marte. But, you know, I see a lot of people in the industry talking about, oh, how do you replace Starling Marte? How do you replace, you know, you see articles all the time on virtually every site right now. How do you replace Starling Marte? Let's be honest. You're not going to replace Starling Marte, at least not for the next 80 games. You can do the best you can, and his replacement is an interesting guy. So I want to talk about him. Craig, what are your thoughts on Adam Frazier? And then if you want to give your thoughts on the Starling Marte kind of saga, go right ahead.
Yeah, and I think Frazier is probably an average outfielder. I wouldn't say that he's much more above that, and he could find himself into a platoon if he doesn't succeed right away. They have their top prospect in the minors, in Meadows, who hasn't shown enough at this point to be in the major leagues. What I said this week that I thought that I would do if I was in, let's say, hypothetically, an NL-only or maybe even a 15-team league, because I think he is replaceable in terms of the stats, in terms of the categories that you're counting in a 10 or 12. I don't think it's an issue because there are guys on the waiver wire. But you're playing in a 15 or an NL, you're not replacing that. That's clear. So what I was kind of thinking, an intriguing idea would be, is outside of Meadows, and to kind of put him aside because he's obviously not ready, would be, okay, let me look at some of the minor league prospects that I think that would come up before or close to the Super 2 date that maybe I catch lightning in a bottle for 40 or 50 games, because we know it happens every year. There's going to be a couple of guys that are going to come up soon. And, you know, like Trey Turner, Gary Sanchez, Carlos Correa, it happens every year. And if people want to deny that it happens, they just got to look at the numbers. Rookies come up and they're more ready than they ever have been. I would try to target those guys, the Bellingers of the world, maybe some unrostered young players, even if they don't necessarily play the outfield, that I could, you know, grab some shares of and potentially move players around in my lineup to the utility spot or even infield, outfield type spot. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not a science that you can legitimately say, I'm going to grab Bellinger. That'll definitely give me 15 home runs that I miss from Marte. But I just simply don't think there's going to be anything on the waiver wire in an NL only or a 15-team league that can replace those counting stats. So I would go the other direction and grab a minor leaguer, fill in with Frazier or somebody else that's going to, you know, be Jason Worth for me for 2 months. And then maybe you've rostered somebody that can be the next Starling Marte. So I kind of went a little bit pivoting from what normal people do. I don't know if that'll work, but that was my suggestion.
I think that's a really good idea because, and for me, Austin Meadows isn't that guy because he's not hitting well and hasn't hit well in AAA yet. Two, the Pirates are not going to bring him up before the Super 2 deadline. So they're not going to mess around with that. They never mess around with service time. I don't know if the Pirates even really consider themselves contenders before this, and this takes a huge hit out of their chances to succeed. Guys that I'll just kind of throw out there as possible, rookies to come up in the next month or two that might be interesting. The Braves have Ozzie Albies. He's an infielder, but he could be an interesting guy. You mentioned Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers. If you're playing in a deeper mix, I love Bradley Zimmer. I'm a huge Bradley Zimmer guy. He's actually my dark horse pick for Rookie of the Year, though. By the time he gets up, he may be too far behind a guy like Benintendi to do it in the American League. So I think those would be my suggestions in terms of that, because I don't think that in a deeper format, like you're right, like in a 10 or 10, 12 team format, you'll figure it out with waiver wire guys and mixing and matching, but in deeper formats, it's going to be much harder to replace the production that Marte gives. And so a spark plug guy coming up from the minors might be the answer. In terms of Adam Frazier, I like Adam Frazier, and they seem to be giving him a decent amount of run and batting him at the top of the lineup at times. So I think he's a guy that could be interesting in deeper formats if he's still around, and he has the ability to steal some bases and has shown that at the minor league levels. Between the majors and the minors last year, sold 21. So he's a guy that could at least help replace some of the speed if he's available in your waiver wire. Darius, what are your thoughts on Adam Frazier and then the whole Starling Marte experience?
Yeah, I think Frazier is certainly a guy. He's got some good contact ability, and I think there's some batting average in there if he can get the playing time. I have some concerns about how willing the Pirates are to play him every day. They actually started John Jaso in right field for the first time in his career the other night, which doesn't fill me with a huge amount of confidence that he's going to play super regularly. But I do like, as you mentioned, that he's been hitting at the top of the lineup when he does play. And certainly, I think he needs a bit of time. He's gone 0-2 this season so far, stealing bases. But I think there is some upside there. And maybe as he gets used to the league, he'll be a little bit more successful on the base paths. So certainly in a deeper league, I can see him finding his way into relevance over the next 80 games of this suspension. As for Marte, I like the idea of adding somebody from the minors with a bit more upside in a deeper league. I agree that, you know, you can't really replace a guy like that when there's a 15 or an NL only. It's just not the kind of thing that you can really find on waivers. I would also say that if you're maybe rebuilding or sort of hoping to contend in the next couple of years, but you're out of it this year, it might be a great time to go out and offer the Marte owner a deal if he's contending and sort of tearing his hair out, wondering where he's going to get some production. Because I've already had one keeper league in which the guy sort said, you know, I'm trying to compete this year and I can't deal with Marte being out for half the season. So it might be a really good time to go out and make some offers and maybe get him for a good price. And I don't have any issues with him when he comes back. I think it'll be just fine. So you could get a, you know, top 2 or 3 round value for a lot cheaper than that if you go out and buy now.
Eli, what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
As for Fraser, I'm really not that impressed. He's like a 5'9 scrappy hitter that, you know, you love him if he's on your real life favorite team, but if he's on your fantasy team, things have gone horribly awry. I mean, he's got 3 homers in 350 career minor league games, and you guys talked about the speed. Yeah, he's had some steals, but he's got 47 steals and 38 caught stealing. So yeah, that's about as bad as a success rate I've ever seen. That's just horrible. I mean, like Enciarte, he makes good contact, but he's just going to give you empty batting average, and maybe he'll give you some runs scored if he bats leadoff. But, you know, as Darius said, John Jaso started in his place the other day. So, you know, I'm just not very excited about this whatsoever.
All right. Let's move on to Tyler Skaggs and see if you guys are excited about what he's doing so far. You know, started off a little bit rough to start the year, but put in a really nice effort against the Kansas City Royals. Eli, I start with you this time. Is this something to start being excited about, or is this kind of just a flash in the pan?
Well, I was actually going to ask you if you regret your bold prediction on Skaggs.
Not yet. The only bold prediction so far that I am regretting is the Eric Thames one. That's the one I'm predicting or I'm regretting right now.
Yeah, I'm not.
You
a
mean
big...
Barry Bonds?
No. Yeah. Unfortunately, I said Eric Thames is going to be more old than new, so that's not looking good.
Well, I don't like your Skaggs prediction either. Like, I get that he's talented and he was a pretty good prospect a few years ago, but he's got a career 4.65 ERA, a career 1.33 WHIP. He's had trouble staying healthy. Like, at some point, you just have to forget the fact that he was a good prospect and realize he just hasn't accomplished anything. I know he's only 25, and there's still definitely a chance that he has a mini breakout, but he just walks too many guys. He throws too many pitches. He's not on a very good team. So, I mean, you're screwed if you're in a quality starts league because he can't go with 6 innings because he throws too many pitches. And you're screwed in a wins league because he's not on a very good team. So he's going to have to prove it to me over a sustained period of time before I believe in him.
Craig, do you believe in Tyler Skaggs?
I mean, it depends on really what you're searching for. He just, and I think, I mean, look, there's no doubt he hasn't been able to stay healthy at all over the course of his career. I think if you knew that you were getting 25 starts out of him, then he could be a back end in a 12-team leaguer, maybe. But he's kind of like, you know, not like a poor man's Gausman for me. And so many people are high on Gausman too, but just so inconsistent. And to me, he fits into that snowball category when you watch him pitch. It's like once something starts to go wrong for this guy, he just can't stop the bleeding. And those are the pitchers that I always worry about long term because then they're forced to throw so many pitches in one inning and then the arm velocity, you know, the velocity goes down, then they get hurt. You don't hear about him for a while. I think he fits into that category where if you see Skaggs after 3 innings, perfect, 4 innings, 5, 6, you know, wow, you should pat yourself on the back. But he could very well go out the next time and give up 7 runs. And so inconsistency and injuries, I don't know. And the Angels have not been a model franchise of keeping their starters healthy, let's be honest, through the years. I mean, it's just like one guy after the next. The other kid is Andrew Heaney, who I thought was going to be mm-hmm. something when they acquired him, and he hasn't been able to throw a pitch. We've just seen this play out too often with this team, I think. So a lot of people did like him, though, before the year. A lot of people were very high on him. But let the guy make 20 starts in a season before I do that would be my opinion.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Tyler Skaggs?
Yeah, I was kind of quietly optimistic. Just coming into the year, I liked his cost. He didn't really cost anything much. And I thought there was definitely still some upside there. But what I've seen so far is velocity's down a couple of miles per hour, even with the hot guns we're getting. And his changeup looks like it's lost a lot of movement to me as well. So both of those things are pretty concerning to me. And I don't know whether he needs to maybe bump that fastball velocity up a bit before the changeup becomes more effective again. But right now, he's not missing any bats with it. The one thing I do like is that the curve seems to be better. He seems to be getting all of his strikeouts off of that at the moment. So that's kind of an encouraging sign. I think if he can bring the velocity back and the changeup along and combine it with that curve, then I do think there is still some decent upside here. But based on what we've seen so far, I don't think that's coming anytime soon. And if I don't see a velocity bump soon, I think I'm going to kind of be staying away this year.
Yeah, I was encouraged after his short stint in the majors last year after coming back from injury. And so I was buying in, and I was one of the people in the industry that was on him this year. Unfortunately, Darius is right. The velocity, I think, is causing some issues, and he is down. If you subtract the hot guns, he's down close to a mile and a half an hour on his fastball. And though I am encouraged by what you just said, Darius, in terms of not only is the curveball look good, he's throwing it more. He's relying on it a little bit more. He's not trying to necessarily blow it past guys all the time. So that is a tad bit encouraging for me, but I think this is kind of a wait-and-see approach, you know, pick your matchups with him, and if he can kind of show maybe a little bit of gains on the fastball velocity, as well as the ability to actually go a little bit deeper, then you could feel more comfortable using him on a regular basis. I think he has the skills. Injuries always are going to be an issue for Tyler Skaggs, so, you know, he's probably not a 10-12 team guy right now. He's much more of a deeper league commodity.
Can we all agree not to use the phrase hot guns anymore?
I don't even know what that is. I'm being honest with you right now. I have no idea what you're talking about.
In terms of the guns reading hot?
I mean, I know what radar guns are, but I haven't heard that expression. Maybe, I don't know, I'm missing something. But no, I was just listening going, that's a cool phrase, but I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Well, in talking with Eno Saris and a couple other people, the switching over to TrackMan this year has made the velocity readings about a half tick higher than they're supposed to be.
Okay, cool.
So it's something to notice when you're looking at velocities. Right now is you need to subtract about 0.5 to 0.8 miles per hour off of what we're seeing because they're a little bit inflated moving over from pitch effect to TrackMan.
Gotcha. Well, I've decided just even after hearing that, I'm not working any harder than I'm working. So I'm keeping the readings whatever they are. I'm not subtracting anything.
Well, I hope that works.
Well, by the look of my fantasy teams, you would know the answer to that. So
How are you doing in Tout Wars? Because I was actually standing right behind you while you drafted your Tout Wars team.
I'm doing horrible. There's no other way to put it. I'm doing horrible. I mean, it was my first. There's really no excuses to be made. But I basically went with a little heavier on pitching than I normally would. So if you look at my pitching staff, you're gonna say, okay, well, he's gonna be all right there. He'll be, you know, middle of the pack to upper echelon with Cole and DeGrom and Urias and Brett Anderson has been pretty good for the Cubs. Even though, look, we know we can't expect a ton from him, but he's a back end starter for me. But the hitting, my hitting has been just, like, I went big on Votto at $40, which is fine, but the rest of my hitters have not produced any power whatsoever. So I'm still waiting for that, and quite frankly, I don't even know if I'm going to get it. But the main culprit for me at this point, I know his other counting numbers are good, but I thought for sure I was going to get 15 to 20 home runs from Justin Turner, and he has none. So I need some power from him, like, soon, or else nothing. I'm stuck with him, so I'm not doing well.
Yeah, well, I liked your team coming out of Tout Wars. I especially liked your pitching staff, so I think you are pretty strong there. You know, it's early. Everything's small sample size right now. So, I mean, you got Coder Glover who's going to get some save chances. You got John Jaso with the Starling Marte news. His stock only goes up, so... and I'm a big Drury and Votto and Polanco fan, so I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, Polanco no power, Drury no power, Turner no power so far, and you know, so that's the key. And then the pitching is, and I keep forgetting to mention him when I always talk about my teams. But Justin, I definitely need Gazelman to be okay. I don't need him to be an ace, But that was somebody that I kept going. I was fighting with Derek Hardy over, and I was expecting him to be a solid number three starter in an NL only. And he is striking out guys, but he's not. He's been inconsistent for me, and that's been a surprise because I saw him pitch up close and personal last year in the regular season and even in spring training too. So I'm a little disappointed with that.
Yeah, he's started off the year fairly rough, but Gzelman, I think, is his most recent start against Philadelphia is much more encouraging. So I think there's only better things to come for Robert Gzelman.
What do you guys think? What do the rest of you guys think on him? Is that would you have invested in him this year? I mean, that was
know I did. I invested in a couple shares, especially in NL in 15 team mixed. Eli, were you in on Robert Gzelman this year?
No, I thought the hype was a little too strong. People getting way too excited. Everyone was expecting this huge breakout, and when you're paying for the breakout, it's a little dangerous.
Darius, any thoughts on Gzelman?
Yeah, I'm kind of in Eli's camp. I was actually kind of interested in him earlier in draft season, and he seemed to be one of those guys who sort of trended pretty quickly up draft boards. And by the time I did a lot of mine, he was actually not going that cheaply anymore because I think the hype had got around on him. So, yeah, I think he'll be better than this, but I don't think I actually own him anywhere now.
Well, Darius wasn't at Doubt Wars with Craig, Eli, and I, but Eli, you were there, and you were standing right behind Craig while he was drafting this team. You couldn't have said something to him, you know, nudged him on the shoulder.
Look, everyone's on their own on those leagues, all right?
He didn't need any help. Appreciate it. Thanks
hey,
a lot.
Hey, Justin was right there, too. I don't know why he's not taking any responsibility for this.
Why?
Well, I'm throwing you guys both under the bus at the end of the year. When they ask me what happened, I'm going to say I had two of the best experts in the country sitting behind me, and they did nothing for me.
I was cheering you on.
I don't give fantasy advice for free. Come on.
Wow. Yeah, I can understand that part of it, but you know, no one even wants my advice for free right now. So
let's move on to another guy and talk about Cole Calhoun, who's started off the year a little bit slow. I've never been a Cole Calhoun guy. Darius, are you a Calhoun guy, and will he turn this around?
It's hard to say that I'm a Calhoun guy because he is one of the most boring players in fantasy, I think. But I do think he'll turn it around. It's just a slow start. I don't see anything too concerning. It's a little bit less contact than usual, but we're still working with such small samples that I don't think it's anything to worry about yet. And he's still walking. The only thing that I'm really a little bit concerned about is the Angels haven't consistently batted him second. And I love him batting second because obviously everyone wants to hit ahead of Mike Trout. So if they continue to sort of move him down the lineup, then I won't like that so much. But I think this is just sort of random small sample size slow start, and he'll be fine.
Craig, what are your thoughts on Cole Calhoun?
Yeah, I think that's a great breakdown. A really boring player on a really boring team outside of Mike Trout, really, to be honest with you. At the end of the year, he's going to have 18 home runs, maybe 20. I would say it's just a slow start for him. I wouldn't put any concern whatsoever into the start at all. But again, no one's ever going to be in love with the guy, but at the end of the year, he'll have the numbers that he had the last two.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Cole Calhoun?
Yeah, nobody's really a Cole Calhoun guy, which is why he's kind of perpetually underrated. Like you guys have said, he's just boring, and he's never hit 30 homers, he's never driven in 90 runs, he's never stole 10 bases, he was never, you know, a big-time prospect, and nobody cares about any Angel other than Mike Trout or characters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So, I don't know, he's just really consistent and reliable. He'll get you a fair amount of runs, fair amount of homers and RBIs. I mean, last year he was 42nd among outfielders on the player rater. I mean, that's useful. He pretty much does that year after year, so I tend to have him on a bunch of my teams because the price is never too that high on him.
Did you just make a Angel the TV series joke?
I did.
That was unfortunate for all of us. Like I said before, I was never a Cole Calhoun guy. He just doesn't do anything that special to me. And I'm sure he'll turn it around. I'm sure he'll deliver 15 to 20 home runs with, you know, a 260 to 280 average. But I don't see how that is that sexy in this day and age in fantasy. And for me, you know, if there's a better option, a sexier option out on the waiver wire, and especially in like your 12 team formats, I would easily drop Cole Calhoun for Kind of one of the up and comers like a Mitch Haniger or someone like that. So
yeah, if you're Justin, you probably drop Cole Calhoun for a little Adam Frazier.
not quite, but I wouldn't be that far off.
The excitement level for Cole Calhoun just tells you how many people stopped listening to this podcast exactly. In the last 2 minutes and 30 seconds. There you go.
Well, then they missed a great Buffy the Vampire Slayer joke then.
They did. You'll never get that anywhere else except here from what I hear. Sarah Michelle Gellar's greatest hits. Are we going to do that next? It's a good conversation.
Well, let's talk some Cruel Intentions, baby.
Let's move on to something a little bit more interesting then. Justin Verlander got blown up in his last start. Hasn't necessarily looked great to start the year to begin with, except for his start against Eli's Chicago White Sox in the first start of the season. Is there any concern, Craig, with Justin Verlander?
No, I don't think so. And he's the kind of guy that when it gets rough, it gets really rough. He'll have two or three really bad starts. Although I haven't been in on him on the last 2 years, I did think that the skills were diminishing and I didn't think that he would get back to the level that he did last year. No, I'm not overly concerned. And he is a fantastic warm weather pitcher, and we're about to see that now. Him and Kluber, I think, too, you'll start to see an improvement from. It's just really hard for these pitchers to go from Florida or Arizona, even though they do have a month lead-in on some of the batters, and perform well when the weather's 20, 30 degrees different. And not everybody it's a problem for. I think it has been in the past for Verlander, and I think he'll be perfectly fine. I have no worries about him whatsoever.
I mean, why would Justin struggle in the cold? He's got Kate Upton to warm him up.
Well, yeah. And he did spend the next couple days after his start with her in, like, Turks and Caicos.
Must be nice.
Yeah, there's some great pictures on their Instagrams of them hanging out in paradise.
No surprise that you saw those pictures, Justin.
Kate Upton in a bikini. Don't act like you're not interested.
Yeah, I won't. I won't deny it.
What are your thoughts on Verlander for the season, though?
Much like Craig, I didn't really expect Verlander's bounce back last year. That was really surprising. So, I mean, I think it's perfectly reasonable to think he won't quite duplicate that this year, but I'm not overly concerned about his start this year. I mean, it was just one bad start. Like, you know, if you look at his numbers so far, his homer to fly ball, left on base percentage, BABIP would all be career worst by a large margin. They'll all come down. He'll be fine. His velocity's not down at all, so that's not a concern. So I think he's fine.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Justin Verlander?
Yeah, I'm a little bit more concerned. His breaking off-speed stuff looks a bit off to me. He's left a lot of it up in the zone. The change-up, much like Skaggs, actually, he seems to have lost a bit of movement on that. It isn't dropping as much as it did last season. So that's something that I'm keeping an eye on. He hasn't really been a guy who sort of started this slowly before, and it's just a small thing, but definitely something I'm monitoring. But I think Craig's right that, you know, he is also a guy who can struggle for two or three starts, and then he'll suddenly go out and roll off a string of fantastic ones. And he showed us last year what happens when we doubt his abilities. So, yeah, I'm not majorly concerned, but that's just a minor flag for me that I'll be watching in his next few starts to see if there's any change there.
Yeah, I'm not really concerned at all. And I think what Craig mentioned is something we don't really think about as much in fantasy, as probably as much as we should in terms of pitchers, is some guys do not like pitching in cold. And some guys prefer it when it heats up and the temperature is better and they can get a better grip on the ball. Verlander is one of those guys. And to Eli's credit, not only is he not lost any velocity, he's actually gained velocity from last year on his fastball. So that's an encouraging
sign. You got to watch out for those hot guns, Justin.
Well, even with the hot gun, he's still got about a half mile an hour on his fastball already, and you know, usually you can gain another half mile throughout the season. So I think there's nothing to be worried about with Verlander. Is he going to give the same numbers as last year? No, but I don't think you were paying for that. You weren't paying for, you know, a top five guy. You were paying typically between, you know, 8 and 15, something like that, prices on Verlander this year, and I think he should be able to at least deliver a level of consistency that's worth the price you paid.
Yeah, if we can name those hot guns Goose and Maverick, I think we'd make everybody happy.
Done.
I'm more interested in Kate Upton's hot guns. That's another story.
Yes, that is another story, and we're going to move on before it gets too graphic on this podcast, even though we're uncensored. We can say whatever we want on this podcast, because one, not that many people listen, and two, we have the little uncensored tag in iTunes, so people know what to expect when they come on and check us out. But let's talk about some waiver wire ads, possible guys who are lightly owned in leagues and are performing fairly decently. So let's start with Matt Andrees of the Tampa Bay Rays. Craig, what are your thoughts on him for this year?
Mildly interested, not really super high on him. You know, the some of what he does is going to be having to be counted on his defense, and you really don't know what that's going to look like on any given night with Tampa Bay. They do a lot of platooning. Kind of a middling guy for me a little bit when I'm looking at streamers, and I'd put him in that category. I like to stream players who I know have a pretty good chance to win, and maybe that's kind of archaic in this day and age where you really don't know who can get the win. But as long as we're counting the wins in fantasy, the odds of me streaming a guy on the Rays would probably be on the low end for me. I'd almost rather take a shot on somebody back end of Houston, back end of the Cubs, and maybe even on Milwaukee at this point with the runs that they're scoring. So not totally in love with the idea of him, and I doubt you'll see him on a roster of mine. But maybe he'll surprise some people.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Matt Andrees?
Yeah, not much different than Craig. He's decent. He's got pretty good control, a decent amount of Ks. I would try to avoid him on the road. He's got a 4.68 career ERA on the road. So his velocity has ticked up a bit from last year. He gets a good amount of ground balls. So, you know, he's okay. One thing that's interesting, I looked at his splits from last year. His pre-All-Star game and post-All-Star game was crazy. Post-All-Star, he had 62 innings, 9 walks, 61 strikeouts. That's great. What do you think his ERA was?
4.5.
6. How's that even possible? How do you have 9 walks, 61 Ks, and 62 innings that have 6 ERA? Pre-All-Star game, he also pitched a little over 60 innings, but he had 16 walks and 48 Ks, and he had a 2.77 ERA. Baseball's crazy. It just doesn't make any sense. But yeah, that's all just to say Matt Andrees is fine. I'm not all that excited, but you know, from time to time at home, maybe you can stream him.
Darius, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, well, part of the explanation to Eli's conundrum is also something that I think we have to watch this season, and that's he's had a bit of a home run problem. I think that's how you get a 6 ERA with those kind of great strikeout-to-walk ratios. I think he's got a really nice collection of pitches, but it doesn't quite seem like he's figured out how to harness them all together yet. So I do think there might be a pretty interesting pitcher there. But one thing I worry about with the Rays, and I think it's good management from Kevin Cash, but they really love to pull starters after they've gone through the order a couple of times. And so especially if you're in a quality start league, which I do quite a lot now, that's a big concern because often he's not going to get to those 6 innings. So if he can make those adjustments and use all his pitches a bit better, I do think he struggles with his release point. But if he can develop that consistency, then I think maybe that'll become less of a concern. But certainly on that team, as the guys mentioned, they're not going to get a lot of wins anyway. And I do think he's the kind of guy who's maybe going to get lifted a little bit earlier than he might on most teams. So, yeah, I think there's an interesting picture there. But he's still got a little way to go before he's really relevant in all formats.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not going to win a lot of games because he's playing on Tampa Bay and he's not going to get a lot of quality starts because they pull him too early, he's not really a guy that's that interesting to me. He's probably already owned in the majority of formats where I would pick him up, which mainly AL only. So for me, I'm, you know, if you want to ride the hot streak a little bit right now, you can always do that with pretty much any guy. But I don't know. He gives up way too many home runs. And, you know, strikeouts are somewhat there, but not great. So it's not a guy that I'm looking to roster in a 15-team mix or shallower than that. Let's move on to Lonnie Chisenhall, who the Indians have decided is going to be their center fielder for the meantime now that they've sent down Tyler Naquin. He's starting off pretty well, slashing .333, .360, .667 with 2 home runs to start this year in, only 7 games. So, Craig, what are your thoughts on Lonnie Chisenhall?
Yeah, I don't mind him. I think, look, the Indians keep going back to him, and we seem to forget going back, I'm going to say probably 4 years ago when I was doing shows, is he was a really hot name in terms of a prospect to come up. And so he'll never live up to that, but the pedigree has certainly been there. What he can do over the course of the whole season, I'm not sure. I think that they, in their heart of hearts, realize that Naquin is the better hitter probably between the two, But the Indians are just loaded with offensive players, and so they really need more defense, and really surprising to see that they've committed so much to Chisenhall, especially at that position. But Justin, you mentioned Zimmer. I think inevitably he will come up and he will be a factor for this team, and Brantley will be healthy and play better defense. So maybe the corner outfielders can help out a little bit more if need be. So, I mean, overall, I'm okay with him in a 12-team league. I think that, you know, he's off to a really good start, which won't be maintained over the course of the whole season. But when I'm not really sure on a player, I always, you know, trend back to, okay, when this player came up, was he hotly sought after? Was he a top prospect? Or is he just a middling type player? And Chisenhall was, once upon a time, one of the Indians' top three or four prospects. So maybe it just took some time for him to put it all together. Certainly possible.
Yeah, I'm not gonna buy it. I think this is just a stopgap solution, at least in center field, for the Indians. They're waiting to play service time games with Bradley Zimmer, who isn't necessarily off to a great start in AAA, but not atrocious. He's already stolen four bases, hit a home run in AAA in 13 games, and he looked great in spring training. So, I mean, Zimmer's going to be up sooner rather than later, and I think they're just going to ride the hot streak with Lonnie Chisenhall. I think they're over Tyler Naquin. But to me, it's really interesting that they would go from the poor defense of Tyler Naquin to putting a guy like Lonnie Chisenhall, who came up as a third baseman in center field. I just don't know what they're doing defensively with that organization. So, but I would guess Bradley Zimmer's up by Memorial Day. So if you want to ride the Lonnie Chisenhall kind of track for a little while, as long as he stays hot, go right ahead. But for the rest of the year, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, the other thing that you got to consider with guys like this, and it always slips my mind, and then I remember, is look, the Indians are built to win now.
Mm-hmm.
They are very much, I mean, I don't think Zimmer would get traded, but you know that outfield on the Indians, and maybe even a couple of infielders potentially, will look different by the time July comes, because they're gonna make trades, they're going to do whatever it is to win the World Series this year, and it could be even at Chisenhall's expense. So I think, you know, sometimes on those teams you got to look at those stopgap guys and say, you know, Rajai Davis comes back to that team. Like, you never know; it could happen. So I don't see this as a full time thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, the Indians want to win now. They were one game away from doing it last year, and they are the prohibitive favorite in the American League. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Lonnie Chisenhall?
Yeah, my concern really is that they seem to just see him as a platoon guy. They only started him against lefties in 8 of 100 games last season. They haven't done it so far this year. So I think he's probably going to continue to start in centre for now against right-handed pitching, but any left-handed starters, they're keeping him well away. And so until that changes, I don't really see a lot of utility in anything but the deepest league, because I don't think he's the kind of guy who's really got the power or the speed to provide the upside as a platoon player. So I think I'm pretty much staying away from Chisenhall, and I certainly think there's a lot of moving parts there that could complicate the situation even further.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Chisenhall?
I just picked him up in a league, and even I don't like him. I mean, it's a 16-team it's a 16-team mixed league where I have four players in the DL, and I have no outfield depth, and I paid a whopping $2 out of $1,000 to get him, and no one else bid on him, I don't think so. I mean, you know, he doesn't really walk. He's never had 15 homers. He's never had 60 RBIs. He doesn't run. Half the time he hits 230. The other half he hits 280. So you just never know what you're going to get from this guy. Like Darius said, he doesn't really hit lefties well. So, you know, he's probably going to only play against righties. And like you mentioned, Justin, Bradley Zimmer might be up to take away time. So, you know, this might not last long. So, you know, don't get your hopes up.
All right. Let's move on to another guy that is widely available in fantasy leagues, and he is off to, or at least he had a pretty nice start in his last start. Luis Severino, a guy who, again, on my bold prediction list, in the same bold prediction as Tyler Skaggs, so I'm a fan. Craig, what are your thoughts on Luis Severino?
He falls into that category of post-type sleeper as far as pitchers are concerned. It just seems like pitchers, young pitchers, are the opposite of these young hitters who come up and star right away. The pitchers need a year, and I think Severino clearly learned something this offseason, because he does not look like the same guy. I know his last start was a little bit uneven, but it was a really good sign, the fact that I think he gave 4 runs and still struck out 8, so he's getting a ton of swings and misses, and I think some guys looking on him as well, so he's fooling some guys. The Yankees, where they're at this season, I'm not sure. It's a tough park to pitch in, and Camden Yards will be difficult, and so will Fenway Park. But, I mean, you got to think that the arrow is pointing up on him at this point, and he should be owned, I would think, in every 12-team league at least. I've been impressed.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Luis Severino?
Yeah, I think he looks a lot better. The great Doug Thorburn, I know when he was sort of making his first starts in the league, still had a lot of concerns about his mechanics, him falling off towards first base quite often. That seems to look much better. He looks a lot more consistent to me, and the delivery looks a lot more even. The momentum is better. I still think he struggles a little bit with the consistency, and certainly when there are guys on base, I think that the start the other night against the White Sox, he absolutely hung a curveball out there that Avisail Garcia crushed while there were a couple of guys on base. So I still want to see him repeat this for a few more starts, because I think that's really his big issue now, whether he can continue to command those all those pitches, and especially the fastball, which everything comes off. But he's throwing 98, and I think if you can command 98, then that's a pretty good start for anyone. So yeah, I'd definitely go out and pick him up in pretty much any league.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Severino?
Yeah, I'm probably picking him up too. I mean, he's only 23, and you know, I know he struggled last year, and it's not a great place to pitch or division to pitch, and there's going to be growing pains with a young guy like this. But I mean, he had 21 strikeouts in his last two starts. He's got two walks and 27 Ks so far. He's throwing really. The one thing I worry about is that he pretty much is just a two-pitch pitcher right now. The fastball and the slider. He does throw in the changeup a little bit, but it's going to be tough for him to get through a lineup three times, I think. But you got to roll with him right now. He's looked great. He gets a lot of ground balls, a lot of strikeouts. I mean, yeah, he got a lot of strikeouts against Tampa Bay and Chicago. They kind of stink, but I think this is a guy that could really break out this year potentially.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to be starts like we saw in his first start against the Orioles, where he got lit up a little bit. But a lot of it comes from what you were just talking about. Is in the past, Eli, in the past, he has been mostly a two-pitch guy, the fastball and the slider. The changeup is looked much improved, and that's something I noticed in spring training when I wrote him up as part of my bold predictions this year, saying that I thought that I picked a collection of, I think, six guys and said three of them were going to be top 40 starters, and they were all guys being taken outside the top 90 starting pitchers. Severino is one of those guys. I was on the train 2 years ago when he came up and looked great. I was on the train last year when he looked horrible. I'm still on the train now, and I would like to say I think I'm probably the conductor of that train, and I think what we're going to get from him is a guy that shows a little bit more consistency. Like I said, there are going to be bad starts here and there. It's not a great park. It's not a great division. But I don't think that division is as much AL beast as it is or has been in recent years. I mean, the Jays are definitely a team that feels like they're on the decline, especially with Josh Donaldson hurt. The Orioles are extremely inconsistent. The Rays suck. I don't even think Boston is as good as a lot of people giving them credit for without Big Poppy. So maybe he can actually do a little bit better within the division than people give him credit for. If he can continue to harness that and throw that third pitch for effect, I think this is a good breakout year for Luis Severino. Let's move on and talk about Taylor Motter, who has been filling in for Gene Segura and is still widely available, even though he has been absolutely killing it. Now, Segura's on his way back, but is Taylor Motter worth continuing to stash, Craig?
Oh, boy, this is a good one, because I brought him up earlier in the week. And look, he showed some power last year, too. And maybe this is just the kind of situation where the Mariners look at this and say, okay, we kind of know what you are, but we don't have room for you at this point, and then we're going to be counting on him for an injury from somebody else, because I just don't see a clear path to playing time for him. So, I mean, unfortunately, for people who were thinking about picking him up now, I just don't see where he plays unless something changes that I'm not aware of. But I am impressed with what I've seen in the last week or two. I don't know if this is something legitimate over the course of the season. My guess would be no, because when opposing pitchers take a look at that lineup and they say, okay, we got to figure out how we're going to get these certain guys out. It's Haniger, it's Cano, it's Cruz. Who's this guy Motter? Ah, it's fine. Just throw him a fastball. Well, I mean, he's shown that he can hit the fastball, but will he be able to consistently hit off-speed pitches and breaking balls? I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think we're going to find out. Where is he going to play next week? I'm not sure. So time may be up on him, unfortunately.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Taylor Motter?
Yeah, I'm quite intrigued. I share the same concerns about the playing time. I do think there are some other Mariners, such as Danny Valencia and even some of the guys in the outfield who are not playing very well right now. So there's potential for him to fill in other places, I think, if they continue to slump and he keeps hitting like this. But I've certainly seemed to see him hitting the ball very hard. He's crushing everything on the inside half of the plate, so I wonder whether he'll continue to hit well if pitchers kind of try and avoid that a bit more. And as Craig says, maybe throw him a little bit more off-speed stuff, whether he'll continue to hit as well as he is. But I think the power is legit, and I also think that there's some speed potential there, although he hasn't been able to show it in the majors yet. But he certainly stole a decent amount in the minors. So, yeah, I think there's something here if you can just find the playing time, but we'll have to wait and see how the Mariners play it when Segura gets back.
Eli, I know you think he has beautiful hair, but will you pick up Taylor Motter on your fantasy team?
I don't think so. I know I'm negative on like every single player every week we do this podcast, but you know, I think if everything went right and he played mostly a full season, I think 15 homers and 10 steals is possible. But what are the chances that he does get that playing time? And you know, this is also a guy that hit 229 last year in his second season at AAA at the age of 27. So it's not like he's been consistently performing in the minors. Yeah, the power seems to be real, but you know, he hasn't really proven much in his minor league career. So, and obviously Segura's coming back in, you know, like 3-4 days. So, it's definitely a guy to keep your eye on. It's possible that he could play some outfield if that, you know, they move on from some other guys. But I'm not too excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have a little bit of feud going with Taylor Motter because, you know, I was a fan of his last year, and he started following me on Twitter. We started going back and forth and talking about a bunch of things, and then all of a sudden, right before his breakout, I go to write about him, and I go and check his Twitter page, and he's no longer following me. So I'm a little PO'd at Taylor Motter right now.
What'd you say?
I didn't say anything, but I've been leaving snide remarks in every single one of my articles on FanGraphs when I have to mention him. So, you know, hopefully he comes back around because I feel like I'm partially responsible for this breakout of his. I think he's going to have a hard time finding playing time, but here's the thing. Dyson has been pretty bad. He's completely horrid against lefties. So I think that maybe you could see Motter get some play in left field. He could back up in the infield at second or at short. And Danny Valencia has been atrocious to start the year, so he could get some play there. I think that Motter, with this kind of power show, could turn into kind of a Swiss Army knife kind of dude for the Mariners. And on a team that probably needs it, because, I mean, their bench is not very good. And so even with Segura coming back, I think Motter could play an interesting role. Now, he'll obviously only be interesting in, you know, a little bit deeper formats, probably 14 teams and larger. But I think he's shown the ability to hit the ball out of the park and with a decent average. And like Darius said, he's shown stolen base prowess in the minor leagues, a couple different seasons of 20-plus stolen bases. In the minors, including in AAA, he stole 26 in 2015, 19 in 2016. So I think he could be a sneaky ad in deeper formats if he's still on around because people aren't interested in him with Segura coming back. All right, let's move on to his teammate Ariel Miranda, who fired a really nice game the other day. Craig, is Ariel Miranda worth picking up?
It could be in the right matchup, and you know, left-handed pitchers, you know, certainly that's, you know, what you got to look at. Unfortunately, the best team that he would face off would be his own team, because the Mariners have been so left-handed through the years. I'd love to see him go against them. I'm not in love with the pitcher completely. He did pitch well for them last year when he came up. He did not make the rotation this year, but because of injury, he is now there again. So I would say probably left for an American League only at this point. I'd be a little bit nervous, to be honest with you, in a 12-team league to throw him out there. 15-team league, no doubt. But for me, just left for ALs and really deep leagues, because I need to see a little bit more. I don't ever get sold on somebody in September, and that's kind of where I was sold on him last year.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Ariel Miranda?
Yeah, I haven't seen too much to make me think there's more to come from him. He doesn't miss a lot of bats, and he struggled with home runs. He's obviously in a good park for it. I think that will help him a little bit. And the outfield defense there should be fairly decent as well. So I think that will help because he gives up a lot of fly balls. But there's nothing too much to get excited about here. And I definitely think he's just a matchups guy. If you can capitalize on a more lefty heavy matchup, perhaps that will help a bit. But overall, I think he's just kind of a spot starter for me.
Eli, are you interested in Miranda?
Not really. You'd think he'd get more ground outs for a guy that throws a lot of splitters. That's kind of, you know, worrisome. Doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. I just think he's a guy that you stream in the perfect situation where he's at home against a team with a lot of lefties. So, yeah, that's not going to happen very often.
Yeah, I'm on board with you guys. It's just not an interesting enough commodity for me outside of maybe streaming or a DFS play in a pinch. So let's move on and talk about the last guy, and that is Aaron Hicks, who has started off the year actually pretty decently, hitting 296, 444, 778 with four home runs. Eli, what are your thoughts on Aaron Hicks?
Like, yeah, he started off well, but he's had a lot of these random streaks where he looked great for like a week or two. I mean, this is a guy that's never had 35 RBIs in a season. Why are we still talking about him? He's never had 12 homers. He's only once had double-digit steals. He's a lifetime 224 hitter with a 303 OBP. Like, he's already 27. Like, yeah, there's some upside still, but ultimately he's the fourth outfielder on this team. He's going to show flashes from time to time, but he's also shown huge bursts of ineptitude. So I'm not believing in this. I'm not falling for it.
Craig, are you falling for it?
He definitely had a chance if Aaron Judge wasn't doing what he's doing to play. And look, you can't fault him. He's making the most of the opportunity right now. I probably like him a little bit more than other people did. He was left for the waiver wire in most leagues, but I think he lost his shot at this point. The Yankees are not taking Aaron Judge out of that lineup with the way that he's playing, and there's no room for him unless they were to trade somewhere else. What do I envision for Hicks? Limited playing time? And then I don't think we think the Yankees are going to be competitive to the point of the postseason this year. And I think he ends up on another team as a fourth outfielder and a kind of player who gets to play somewhere else in the postseason. Maybe goes to the San Francisco Giants. They need an outfielder. If they're in it, they would take him on. I think they move on from him this year. And I think he could have some value late in the season somewhere else. But on this team, it's going to be really hard for him to play. But can't fault him. He's gotten off to a good start. It's just Judge has been killing it.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Aaron Hicks?
Yeah, I'm really kind of impressed right now. The strikeouts to walks is pretty unusual. You don't really see this. I know it's early in the season, but he's walked eight times and struck out three. So it makes his line look kind of absurd. But I'm very encouraged by that. He's always been someone who can take a walk. But if anything in that strikeout department is real, then I think that's really promising. And I do think the power can stick. I always thought he would hit a few more home runs than he's actually managed in the majors so far. So I think that's probably real. But the playing time is a huge concern. And unless one of those guys, the regulars, gets injured, I just don't see where it's coming from. They've got too many other guys to fit in there at DH and in the outfield. And so, yeah, I do think he probably either needs to get moved or one of those guys, Ellsbury, Gardner, Judge, needs to get an injury for him to really get some regular run in this team. So I'm not sure that we're going to get to see an awful lot of him, but if you're in a very deep league and you just want to gamble in the hope that he finds his way into more playing time, then why not?
You know what's really depressing for me as a Giants fan? The fact that Craig just mentioned Aaron Hicks as a potential guy that they could go after and how excited I am about that considering their options right now.
Yes.
That is so sad for me right now.
I would love to
you mean
see
you're not excited about Chris Marrero?
No.
I'd love to see them. I think he got hurt or something the other day, maybe with his finger or whatever, but I mean, I think Upton is the perfect guy for them. I really do. Like, I mean, listen, in reality, we know what he is. But from a fantasy perspective, I mean, Upton could easily come up and be a 15-15 type guy for them. With that, and he'll bat 230 or 240.
And they're okay with that because they have no power in their lineup.
I thought Upton did a really good job for San Diego. I thought he reinvented himself. First 3 months of the season, there were a lot of positives there. They traded him, and it went right back to the old guy in Toronto. But he wasn't playing every day, and I thought the breakout was real last year. Not a breakout to be the Upton that we saw 7 years ago, but definitely fantasy relevant. Definitely 10 home runs, 10 steals, 15-15. I think he could do that if he got everyday playing time somewhere. So I'm hopeful for him, and I think that was a good move by the Giants.
Yeah, hopefully they get him up. I think it's much more likely the Giants trade for a guy like Brett Gardner, who the Yankees would love to get off their books coming into some, you know, being able to spread some more free agent money around in the next couple of years, especially with Bryce Harper and guys like that coming up. And the Giants love old guys.
You can have Melky Cabrera.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I don't know if the Giants would do that because he did test positive for steroids in San Francisco. But
too soon.
I'm not that interested in Aaron Hicks because there's just the issue with playing time, like everybody is kind of commented on. But before we kind of wrap up, I was just kind of messing around while we were talking on the StatCast leaderboards. Guess who is second in average exit velocity for batters right now?
Taylor Motter.
Taylor fucking Motter.
Oh, man. I'm the man.
How crazy is that?
Well, I knew it had to be something shitty that we talked about earlier in this podcast, though.
It must be his hot guns that's just really firing the ball off the bat.
If anybody ever wins a fantasy league based on hot guns, I'm retiring after the year. I mean, that's it.
I'm gonna go trademark that for the podcast after this. But
We should call the podcast "Drink When We Say Hot Guns."
Wow.
That is the name of the episode. That will wrap us up for this episode. Craig, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun. Anytime, I'll do it.
Definitely. Why don't you, again, tell people where you can reach on social media and then give yourself some plugs.
Okay. At Craig Mish on Twitter. That's the best way to find me. And my fantasy baseball show is on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, XM87, Sirius 210, 9 to 11 Eastern, Monday through Friday on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, and then Sundays with Lenny Melnick from 7 to 10 Eastern, also on the same channel.
Darius, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
You can find me at DariusA64. I'll be working on my CFIP article, some guys to buy and sell based on the Baseball Prospectus CFIP metric. So that should be coming out next week. And I've also got working on something banished to the pen about no-hitters. Well, no-hitters that aren't no-hitters, in fact, because we've had quite a few lately of guys getting pulled in the middle of no-hitters. So I decided to go back and see how many guys have started games and been removed in the middle of them and then actually gone on to lose them. So that should be coming out early next week as well.
Hey, Ross Stripling will be on that list.
Yeah, he will.
Eli, I want you to tell people where you can reach and what you're working on.
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. And if you like the show Survivor, me and Justin will be recording a podcast right after this.
Yes, we will. Our Survivor podcast is going nice and strong right now, so definitely check that out. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can catch me here 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this podcast. You can read all my written work over at FanGraphs, where I do the Roto write-up 4 days a week and then a weekly article on Wednesdays. And then I do other stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. And coming up soon, I'll have a special announcement. Hopefully be able to announce that early next week. But another project I'm working on that should be coming out pretty quick. So definitely look forward to that. Please give us a rate and review. And if you give us a 5-star review, make sure you're entered in to win one of our free Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirts or other prizes. So definitely do that. Be giving another one away on Monday. So please give us a 5-star review. It really helps us out. That will wrap us up. For Eli, Darius, Craig, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Fall.